Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, Paul here. Welcome to Alibi Extras, produced by Develop Audio. These are bonus episodes that I'm really excited about because it's where I will get to talk to producers, journalists, technicians, and musicians who have contributed to the creation of our investigative podcast, Alibi. I'll be extracting their secrets, thoughts, and stories, and how they felt about going through the process. You can find all the previous episodes of Alibi in this feed. Now, there is no better way that I can think of to start off Alibi Extras than chatting to one of my oldest friends, who also happened to do the music for Alibi. His name is John Bartman.
Cool.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. It's a little bit soft.
Oh, good.
How's me?
A little bit soft. Yeah, you're perfect. Is that better?
Yeah, that's a bit better, yeah. And I kind of like the fact that my voice is slightly more powerful than yours at the moment. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Cool. Good. Well, it's good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Sorry about all that chaos. Let me just flatten this guy.
Okay, so let's go. Okay, 2016. We were working on the first season of Alibi. What were you doing in 2016? Where were you at? Sort of professionally and personally and like all that sort of stuff. Where was your head at?
2016 was the last great reboot. We actually went to Australia for a couple of months.
Oh, yeah.
Vandy and I went to Australia and ended up, basically living in my sister-in-law's family basement for a few months. And I managed to get some work done from there.
Yeah.
So, I guess that was the start of the idea that remote work could be a thing, which I'm now like, pursuing wholeheartedly. And then professionally, I just finished with VoiceMap. I was kind of still doing some stuff remotely for them. But the GPS audio app that I was working with, it was great. It was like a good 3 years.
Just explain that, because I always loved VoiceMap. What was VoiceMap again?
Mm. So the story is the founder, Capetonian guy, who had a hookup with another South African who ran an incubator in Singapore and pitched him in this idea of, you know, interesting GPS tours, not like boring museum tours and these bus tours. He actually worked for the Cape Town tourism bus service, and he just found the tours very static. So the idea of starting to actually get locals, people who lived in the areas, to write these tours. And then basically at its heart, VoiceMap is GPS and audio together. So audio that only triggers or plays back on your app when you go to that location. And with that, the applications are, you can do museum tours and, very cool, like walks through the city and that kind of thing. And I also did that that fictional tour through the forests here in Cape Town. And
yes.
Can you guess what this area once was? The answer is just up the path. When you're done, make your way onwards.
Do you still get people finding that? Because we should put that in the show notes as well, actually. I love that.
Yeah,
it
sure.
It's so
sure.
cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really pay too much attention to it. I think about it when I go do those walks, but it's not something I'm really pushing, you know. It was kind of a labor of love, and I really enjoyed putting it together, for sure.
Yeah, and then at that time we were also doing, I was writing down some notes, and I remember that I showed you the first draft of Alibi with my voiceover, and you were like, you should just release it. There's no point polishing a turd, was basically your advice to me.
That's a music industry saying. You can't, if the band thinks they're amazing and then says, can you fix it in post, the sound engineer often has to utter that phrase back to them, like, no. Just rather do a few more passes and get it right on the recording.
Yeah, I think we re-recorded everything like so many times. I mean, it's been a long time. You can be very candid. Like, how did you find it?
It's not like I was super experienced back then either. You know, the idea of doing music for audio, so audio storytelling, to me was just amazing. I've learned a lot since then. I don't realize that, like, yeah, a lot of the work that I did back then was wanting, but that's it. That's the process. You just throw your hat over the fence. So I was just happy to be on board, bro. To be honest, it was just, it was quite an honor for me to, like, be able to tell people I'm scoring something. You know, I'm actually, like, I was kind of involved in the helping with some of the flow and the whatever, the production stuff. But at the heart of it, I was like sitting down going, right, okay, we've got a few cues to come up with. And it felt like the first steps on the journey to scoring and, you know, narrative scoring and film scoring, TV and stuff like that. So it was great. And it was a door that I'm very glad that you guys opened for me.
Okay, cool. That's good to hear. And then so then when you say that you've, like, learned a lot since then, what do you sort of see having happened since then in terms of, yeah, and what you've learned, but then also just, I guess, I mean, audio production and your role in it since then, what do you kind of see?
Everybody wears a lot of hats, but specifically with something as, like, low down on the hierarchy as music is. And I just say that because of the abundance of music that's available. The people who sign up and stick their hand in there and go, I'm the musician, often end up doing other stuff. And this has been true for every production I've worked in. The nonfiction stuff, the fiction stuff, I've always been, kind of had a seat at the table for input on scripting and stuff. So it's kind of, it almost feels like being able to play a couple of chords on a piano or having access to some music software tools, that kind of enables you to have credibility in other departments, because I assume that the team that you're working with looks at you and goes, okay, well, this person is obviously a creative person. We don't have to try and, you know, get them to prove that and then to judge their suggestions on merit. So I guess the biggest realization has just been that the dream, the naive dream, is that you're just going to be doing music, when in reality, you're probably going to be asked to chime in on a lot of other stuff, which is kind of as it should be. If you're doing a project for the passion, if you're not doing it for the passion, then yeah, you can write the music and that's over and done with. But I think so far, I would say most of the projects that I've worked on have just, been run on some kind of, like, natural desire to tell that story and to help that story be easy on the ear. So nothing that creates too much, you know, tension in the listener. And also of a high quality.
I think you also, like, sell yourself short a bit on that, because I reckon, I assume why you've been brought into those projects as a creative is because you're so good at all the other things as well. Like, people are like, okay, this guy is ostensibly here for the music, but we can also get him to help us with the script and help us with this and, like, all the stuff that you helped with in Alibi. So I assume it's like, if you weren't so good at all those things, then you probably wouldn't get asked, right, as well.
Well, I guess it works then, you know? Like, if I were to come in guns blazing and be like, I'm Mr. Know-It-All, then I wouldn't get those kinds of referrals. And thank you. I appreciate that. I think at the end of the day, your reputation is everything that you've got. So if you can not impose your will too much, but at the same time be very helpful and not be, like, uninterested and take 3 weeks to get back to someone, and if you contribute, then you get a good reputation. And so,
yeah,
I really do work very hard at this stuff. And I was doing some sums today. I'm like, Okay, so about 80% of the work of my time that I spend working is either educational, so I'm studying, or just completely not paid because I'm learning something about how to do the job better next time, and et cetera, et cetera. But the results are, I mean, I still get these emails quite regularly saying, hey, I found you on so-and-so, can you do this? And now I'm getting to that point, which I've been working for 15 years, which is to be on the receiving end of interesting, you know, and preferably lucrative job opportunities, gigs, freelance opportunities, stuff that I can enjoy and still kind of keep the lights on with, you know, that's the middle way. Yeah, but reputation is key, definitely.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I want to get into the audio drama stuff a bit as well, but like maybe we can just talk about where podcasting was at in 2016, especially in South Africa. And I guess by extension, the music. I mean, Serial loomed large, right, at that point. Mm. And I was working for a nonprofit that specialized in wrongful convictions. So it kind of seemed like, okay, right, this is an opportunity for us to do a possible wrongful conviction in a serial type format. How much of that kind of baggage did you take into doing the music? So when you were doing the music, like how much of that, like, I mean, obviously you were aware of it, but how much of it were you kind of influenced by? How much were you trying to like subvert, like all that sort of stuff?
It should be known that like I was, Serial blew my mind. I was one of those people who was like, have you heard of Serial? And most people are like, what's that?
Yeah.
It's a podcast. And they're like, what's that? I actually experimented in 2016 at that time. I was inspired by podcasting. And I actually launched a podcast. I started a podcast in 2016, which was called Serious Advice for South African Musicians or something like that. And I recorded 3 episodes and uploaded them and learned how RSS worked and all that. So I was inspired at the time. And I think you and I had this chat to keep it pretty much on the format of Serial. So the theme song, of course, is a sound alike. It's, you know, you don't have to be musical to hear the similarity between the Alibi theme song and the Serial one. But from there, it started to diverge. And the main difference is the quantity of music. I was just so amped. I was so excited about writing music that I came up with a whole bunch of themes, and they're actually still online. In fact, I made a sale of one of them today. So the themes that I wrote in 2016, I released as an album sort of thing, kind of like a Creative Commons contribution called Heart of Podcast Themes, which has a bunch of typical generic moods. For example, betrayal, acceptance, accusation, trauma, tension, release, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that people could use. So I was just, it's just like almost a chemical reaction happened. You just drop a little bit of nickel into the Bunsen burner and suddenly like thing just like explodes. And it's been going like that since then too. So it didn't take a lot, is what I'm saying, for me to really jump on board. And then in terms of the actual musical contribution, Serial, as I mentioned, was quite sparse with their music, which suits the journalistic format quite well. But I wanted to give our one, you know, the Alibi series, a bit more of a heartfelt kind of approach. So I wrote a lot more music for it. Early days, kind of learning how it worked and stuff. since then I've written a lot of music, and that I will always think of that as the starting point for a career in scoring was Alibi for sure.
I just want to talk a little bit about your audio drama stuff. You know, these sorts of journalistic podcasts owe a lot to the dramas. I mean, where do you see the differences? Where do you see the similarities, and why have you kind of gravitated to that as something that you want to do?
Yeah, this is such a great question. At the heart of it is the relationship between the news and entertainment. So as a musician, if somebody wants their show to sound more newsy, then use less music and a certain type. And if they want it to sound more like entertainment, then use, generally speaking, more music and also a certain type. So you can really sway the outcome. I mean, the power. But you really can make it sound... Like, for example, I mean, when I was really young, I saw this clip, and it was an illustration of how music scoring works. And it was just a picture of a 10-second clip of an alligator walking down a riverbank and sliding into the water. Just nature documentary. The first thing they did was they gave it the terrible, terrifying music, and here's the scary monster. And then they gave it some kind of like cool jazz, and that became like funny. And so the same clip could be interpreted according to the music.
Right, yeah.
I guess you need to know from the directors and producers, what are we doing here? Is this meant to make people go, this is so cool? Or is this meant to make people go, I feel smarter now? Or, you know, who are you aiming for? And it really, most of the time, if I try and ask those questions to teams, the answer is more vague than I would like. It would be perfect if the brief was super specific, like it kind of was with Alibi. It was very much like we're making cereal, and I could go with that. So yeah, there are playbooks in place, and I guess that's what you end up ultimately in this age where everybody actually kind of knows how to make music or has at least the tools to put together something basic. I mean, you can write music in a web browser now. You don't even need like an audio workstation or any software libraries or any MIDI keyboards or anything. So in the age of saturation like this, what you actually, you know, hire someone for is judgment. And I'm seeing that more now, like in the quote requests and the offers I get is it's people reaching out saying, you know, we need someone who knows how to do this, not just knows how to copy, but actually understands the whole process, like what the end result should be. You know, I think the influence of fiction is becoming far more powerful now on nonfiction. For example, everything is being sensationalized and dramatized, even the news, and music is a big part of that.
Obviously, you worked on the second season as well. What was the difference in working on the second season compared to the first?
For me, it was a definite improvement in the overall quality of the music. So I kind of cut my teeth on the first season. And it was also the ice had been broken. So it was easier because we could revisit themes, musical themes, and the way it had been paved. You know, it was like much much simpler process, yeah.
Maybe we should just finish with a quick plug of your podcast, which is fantastic, by the way. Do you want to talk about that
Sure.
a bit? Like How I Make Music is very cool.
Yeah,
and cool. And sort of evolved massively.
Yeah, that's
and
the idea.
And grown in huge success. Just give what's the elevator pitch on How I Make Music? Because sure, I do sure. like the elevator pitch on it.
It's very niche. So the name of the show is How I Make Music, but it's actually not about how I make music. It's about how all of these other people make music.
Strings that play under the melody.
I was walking for historical audio drama.
The elevator pitch, it's where the audio drama composers get to tell their own stories. So it is an interview series with various different composers, mostly from the UK and Europe and the States.
The piece of music you're currently listening to is called The Fog Clears.
And they all take 20 minutes to tell stories and use their own musical compositions and the parts to convey a very smooth listening experience. I call it psychedelic editing.
No one's ever reached the top.
That we know of. Maybe they didn't want to come back down.
In a silent host format. So while I do chat to them, I elicit their responses in a video chat. I actually edit my voice out entirely. So what the listener hears is the Song Exploder format, which is just the artist talking about their work with an underscore of original material, which can be remixed. So it's a very colorful, very creative approach towards interview. The show is nonfiction, but all of the guests on the show, who are actually the hosts, they are all makers or creators of fiction podcast. So I'm quite proud of it. So I'm finding one by one, people are like, they either don't know about it or they just have heard it a couple of times and then they love it. So it's really finding people who are passionate about it. So yeah, I'll give it a listen. It's good for, even if you're not a musician, or I actually edit it deliberately so that people who aren't musical can enjoy the experience of listening to these, like, this kind of smooth interview format, very psychedelic editing. Yeah, give it a listen. Tell me what you think.
Cool. That's it. Thanks so much, John.
All right. Good. Thank you for having me, Paul.
Thank you to everyone for listening. This has been Alibi Extras. I'm Paul McNally. You can find out more about our podcasts and training at developaudio.co.za. So that's it. See you next time. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.